Welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast with Louise Duffy, the podcast which introduces you to the people behind the brands from the world of fashion, beauty and beyond. In today's podcast, I am joined by a true maven of interiors, Abigail Hearn. She is known in the industry as a rule breaker and a game changer. She's best known for her enchantingly eclectic style. She's recognized as one of the most influential tastemakers in interiors. She's been described as one of the world's most exciting designers. She's often referred to as the high priestess of interiors. And the visual landscapes that she creates are characterized by inky hues and a laid back and edgy glam. Her East London home is a tableau of this raw style, and also the location for interiors masterclasses. She's the author of 3 best-selling books on interiors and has an ever-increasing and incredible product range of furniture, lighting, and the most beautiful faux flowers that can be found in Brown Thomas. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Brown Thomas Podcast. Abigail, welcome to the Brian Thomas Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to do.
I'm so happy to talk to you because you know the dream party dinner game that everyone plays, you know, who you would have at your dream dinner party. Your house is a location for my dream dinner party. It is magic. And you can come. You can come to the dinner also. But you've really created something magical within those four walls. You must be very proud of it.
Thank you. I mean, yes, for me, my whole kind of remit for myself when it comes to interiors is to create something that is magical and tantalizing and kind of draws you in and cocoons you. So that's kind of exactly what I've done.
Yeah. And I would imagine if your shop didn't look as good, it would be quite hard to leave your four walls every day. It is a sanctuary, as you say.
It is a sanctuary. I think the thing with the business is, I mean, I travel a lot and I work a lot, so I need to create a space that feels very much like, literally like you just said, like a sanctuary. So when I shut the door, I feel like I'm in a completely different world. And that is how I sort of go around designing my store, my house, everything really.
Yeah. And like you say, it's just cozy, and be it through color or texture, it's just that very safe space for you. So my husband always he'll laugh at this conversation because that's my eternal quest, to create this cozy little house, because I think almost for your well-being, we have crazy lifestyles and you say you're traveling all the time. It's important to just get back to that place that is entirely yours and it's just as perfect as you want it to be. Like the sanctuary, you know, we keep coming back to that word, but that's what you've created in your place, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the well-being thing hits the nail on the head, because the reason that I am so obsessed with interiors is that literally they change the way you feel. They don't just change how you feel in your space, they change the way how you feel completely. So mine makes me more confident and it makes me happier. And that's one of the reasons I think that I'm so obsessed with interiors, because it's so easy to do. I mean, people see my house and think, oh my God, it's unachievable. But when you actually break it down into nuggets, when you add cushions and a paint color and faux botanicals and all these sort of things that kind of tantalize the senses, you are literally creating the coolest cocoon in which you can hunker down, whether it's summer or winter. And it does make you feel better about yourself and your surroundings, and that therefore makes you feel happier.
And I think you've created a new verb to cosify, you know, and I've heard you say that a couple of times on Instagram. So if somebody wanted to cosify their home, then what are the top three things you would advise?
I think one of the most, obviously the biggest kind of game changer that you can do to any space is introduce colour, no matter what your kind of colour palette is. I'm obviously quite drawn to inky, swampy colours, literally because they cocoon. The next thing is, I think often quite neglected, is pattern and texture. So if you think of pattern and texture like a herb or a spice, it just adds that pizzazz, that finishing touch, which then turns the space around. So I'm obsessed with texture, because the more textures you have in the space, the more intriguing the space feels. And if everything is solidly hued with no pattern whatsoever, it can just read a bit like a big yawn and quite boring. So pattern again is like a herb and a spice. So I would say, actually, I want to say 4 things: color, pattern, texture, and lighting. Lighting is so key, because lighting creates atmosphere, and you just get, you know, by using table lamps and you just dot them all over the place, you can get such incredible atmosphere with lighting.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, people might look at your home, and in case anyone thinks I'm a peeping Tom or a stalker, your home is so evident all throughout your Instagram. And, you know, it's the place where you do a lot of your videos and your tutorials. But it looks like a magical place. But it might seem to somebody starting out or buying their first home that it is impossible to achieve that because there's so much depth and there's so much layering. Do you think the problem with the way we decorate is, you know, and I'm at that stage where I have so many friends who've just got their first house and decorated their house, and I hear a lot of people saying, and I'm finished now, the house is finished. And we approach interiors in a different way than we approach fashion. We don't buy our winter wardrobe and say, and I'm done now, that's me done. Mm. Well, we kind of do that with interiors. We stop at a certain point and it's done, the house is done.
Exactly.
And therefore it might seem hard to achieve the layers and the depth that you have in your home.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mean, I'm never really done in interiors. I never really finish it. And I think for me, yes, layering is one of the most intriguing things that you can do to your space, because when you layer a room, your eye doesn't know where to land immediately. And when your eye doesn't know where to land immediately, it automatically feels more tantalized and intrigued. And so the less layers that you have in a room, the less intrigued and tantalized you feel in the room. So I say, first of all, obviously get all the major components in the room. And then how I do it in my house and how I also do the stores is I literally will break down into little corners. So I'll say, I don't know, this weekend I'm looking at the mantelpiece and I'm going to layer it up until I'm happy. Or I'm going to look at the alcove, or I'm going to look at the seating area, rather than that overwhelming kind of thing like, oh, how am I going to do this whole room? It's just too overwhelming. If you break it into little zones and then layer each zone, it just becomes a lot easier. But you're right, the less layers that you have in a room, in my opinion, the less cozy and the less cool it feels. But there's a fine line, you see, between going really cluttered until you walk in and your brain goes, oh my God, it's over the top. So a trick that I use time and time again, which has served me really well, is I'll reduce the number of colors in a room. So I won't use more than, let's say, maximum 4 colours in a room. And that means that I can then mix anything with anything and it looks really beautiful. And I don't get this hot mess of a room where everything is a different colour fighting for attention.
Yeah. And why do you think it is then that we stop or that we finish our interiors as opposed to our wardrobe, which is probably for most people ever evolving?
I think with interiors, it just feels a lot scarier. And if you're not an interior designer and it's not your forte, you just do the basics and that's when you stop. But I think the great thing now about Pinterest and Instagram and blogging and interior design shows is that people more than ever are having the confidence, and that is the key word, confidence, to take their spaces to the next level rather than looking upon a space as purely functional. Because when you look upon a space in a purely functional, practical way, it does just that. It's functional. You can sit down, you can watch TV, you can have a bath, la, 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 la. But when you actually then put your interior design hat on and you take it to the next level, which more and more people are doing because obviously the whole web has opened all that up, I think people are getting more excited than ever before. I mean, our design classes have never been so booked up ever, and I've been running them for 8 years now. So I do think more than ever, people are wanting to literally make their space unique and not just kind of do the functionality, practicality side of things.
And your design classes, as you mentioned, they're so popular, you know, and I think we talk about Instagram and it gives us an opportunity to look inside someone's home, someone that we're interested in. We can see, you know, inside the walls and what the space looks like, and obviously get to know the person a little bit more. You physically allow people into your home for your design class, which is a big move. I don't know anybody else doing such a thing. How has it worked out for you?
I do. I mean, I love it. I take it also to Australia and America, and I have them in hotels where like 50 or 60 people come along. But I actually love it more in my home. It's a lot more intimate. So we don't allow more than 16 people in because they spend the day with me. We have lunch. We kind of tour the house. It's a whole big thing on presentations. But for me, I get so much out of it because everybody's eyes just light up and they become super obsessed and excited about interiors. So rather than just looking at a slideshow, e.g., they're actually walking around my living room or my dining room or my garden, and they can see everything that I'm talking about is put into practice, and it kind of brings it to life. And I get so much out of it, like an adrenaline rush, seeing their excitement, and they leave feeling really like pumped up and really excited, and then they send me pictures of what they're doing. And so for me, it's a great joy. It doesn't feel like teaching, really. It's just it's happened very accidentally how the whole thing came about, but I absolutely love doing it.
And I would imagine that there is a stronger relationship that could be formed. As you say, they'll follow up and they'll show you what they're doing because they've been in your house, which, you know, might add a level to it. Are there any rooms that are out of bounds in your house when people are poking about?
No, not really. I mean, I walk around with them, but no, there's not really. Every room, they're happy to go in and they take pictures. And it's funny because we're having people, like people have flown in. So I just did one on the weekend and saw people flew in from Tennessee and people coming from Australia and South Africa. And it's gone so bonkers that we've now turned it into an online class. So you don't just have to come to London to kind of see it. But I think the reason that, not just seeing my house, I think the reason that it is quite popular is that I decorate slightly differently than the norm. And I kind of push boundaries and take people slightly out of their comfort zone and create quite magical spaces. And I think that the real key, that people just want to have a house that literally tantalizes them and makes them feel super excited. And you can't do that when you follow the rules. And if you don't know much about interior design, breaking the rules seems really scary. And I try to demystify all of that, but it's a constant breaking of the rules type day.
And so what are the key rules then? What is the main rule, rather, that you encourage your students to break?
So for example, I encourage people to play around with scale, because if everything is perfectly proportioned in a room, if the lamp is the perfect size on the table next to the perfect sofa, it reads like a catalogue. And I want you to put a supersized table lamp or a floor lamp on a table next to your sofa, or I have a small dining table as my bedside. The minute that you play around with scale, you're kind of really making proportion and perspective. You're really blurring the lines and fuzzing it up. So I sort of say that if you want to create magic in a space, you literally can't follow the rules. The other thing is that, which is a big game changer, which scares so many people, but when they kind of walk around the house, they get it. Everything is painted out the same color when it comes to doors and window frames and skirting and ceilings, all the same color as the paint on the walls. And therefore, you're creating a space that feels automatically grander than it really is. And things like lighting, I kind of mix around. And so there's so many different ways. If you just follow these rules, you'll just get an average place. And I kind of want to really turn that around.
And colour is so important. You have a book called Colour, you know, and your those dark, inky hues are really what characterises your design. It's a really definite characteristic in your work. So, you know, I have tried now, maybe on my second round of decorating the house that I now live in, and I have tried so many times. It's a small place, so I've tried a couple of times to introduce that dark colour, but I've chickened out because we're kind of schooled to say, okay, lighter colours make your area look bigger. So I've chickened out. So what do you do with somebody who's a complete wimp like me and who is afraid to embrace that colour and just throw the navy up on the wall or the dark green or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that that's a great big misnomer, because if you're painting a room that's small in a lighter colour, how much bigger do you really think that lighter colour is going to make the room? It's not really going to make it any bigger. I mean, it's not going to make it double size. And when you go dark, and the thing is, when you go dark, you see the corners of your room as when you go light. The corners will blur out and fuzz out, and it will feel mysterious. And because you can't see the edges, it actually feels bigger, not smaller. That's where most people don't really understand about dark colour. The other thing I think with dark colours, where some people find that they don't work, is that because I've done a paint range, I became really obsessed with this. If you use synthetic colours as opposed to pigments made from the earth, as the light changes, your colour won't change when it's a synthetic. Whereas if you're using pigments that are made from rock and stone and clay, as the light changes, the colour in your room changes and takes on all these different nuances and is very complex and very beautiful. And the trouble with synthetics is that they can't do that. Although you can match to the eye, once you slap it on the wall, that's the colour you've got. Summer, winter, day, night, it never changes. So when you're using more expensive brands, which is made from pigments of the earth, that colour is so incredible, incredibly intoxicating. And the biggest thing is, don't think because you have a small room, painting a room dark will make it look smaller, because it actually makes it look bigger. And any interior designer will tell you that. And when you have a small room and you paint it in a pale colour, you're seeing all those corners and you're accentuating the fact that it's smaller.
Okay. So, and when you talk about extending colour onto skirting boards or, you know, the doors, do you continue it onto your roof then? Does that continue to...
Always, always the ceiling. always the seat. It doesn't matter about floors, because when you come into a room, you're never looking down, and you don't read a room looking down at your feet. But always the ceiling, the same colour as your walls. Because what you're doing is, you then, to the eye, it can't really tell where the wall finishes and the ceiling begins. And therefore, you're almost creating infinity, and the room looks grander and cooler. And everything in that room immediately takes on a cooler perspective, because you haven't got all these different planes of different colours breaking up the room. Walls don't look as stumpy. It's the biggest game-changing thing that you can do to any room.
So let's talk about your faux flowers, because they are such a beautiful addition to the interior space within Brown Thomas. When did you recognise this need in the consumer to bring foliage into your home in a permanent way, and obviously a hassle-free way as well?
Yes, it actually happened incredibly organically. My sister, who is a partner in the biz, was working for incredible florists for 15 years in London, from Jane Packer to Nikki Tibbles to McQueen's, just in real flowers, doing incredible installations for President Clinton and all sorts of celebrities. She joined the business and would constantly be moaning that we couldn't afford to decorate the store with thousands of pounds of foliage every week, or flowers, and we couldn't find anything in faux. So then I had this crazy idea to say, okay, let's find factories and let's get them to produce exactly what you want in real, but in faux. And that took a couple of years. And then we found some factories. And now we have, I think it's about 12 factories that work for us. So we design everything. And then we go over there 4 or 5 times a year. Everything is hand-painted. Everything looks organic and foraged and wild, and very naturalistic. And I think that's why it's kind of gone around the world and gone a bit mad for us, because lots of Gwyneth Paltrow came along and absolutely loved it, and we send a lot to Hollywood and films use them. And I think because in the past, so flowers just look so plasticky and just really naff, and now we've kind of converted it so they look incredibly naturalistic and very beautiful, and we design them according to the seasons as well. So, you know, the easiest 5-minute facelift, as I say a lot, to enliven any shelf or table or anywhere in your home is to put a flower or a plant, because it just lifts it. So I think it's kind of taken off by storm. We started off just putting them in our own store, and then more and more brands around the world got involved, and then Gwyneth did a thing, and then more and more people. I mean, it's madness now. It's the biggest, craziest part of our business.
It really is. And I think, you know, it's a clever move for anybody, because God, I'm a plant killer, I have to say. I mean, they last no length in my house when they're real. So I had to make that move to, you know, to the artificial foliage.
It's funny, because I was giving a talk and I was talking to a horticulturist, and she said that the majority of fresh flowers are flown in from South Africa and sprayed with chemicals and blah, blah, blah. So actually, it's not the coolest thing to do to buy fresh, if they're cheap, I should say, and they're not coming from your local kind of, you know, nursery. But I think the biggest thing for me with those is that if they look incredibly naturalistic, then you can constantly reuse them. So I take mine from room to room, from season to season. I'll, let's say, take some eucalyptus and just have a jug of eucalyptus on the table, and then I might add some peonies, for example, or some foxtails. So you can just keep adding to it, and it's such a easy way to bring life to a space, I think.
Yeah. Well, floristry is a real art, you know, and not one that all of us have a flair for. So if you're talking to somebody who is going to go down that route of really setting their house up with faux botanicals, what is the advice you'd give them, or how do you start? What is it? What is the best product to go with from the outset?
Well, I have a sister who's a florist, and she does all my bouquets. But if I'm doing it for myself, which I've done in my house, I will take a single stem, for example, let's say a peony or a eucalyptus or a saltbush, and I will just get 3 or 5 of them and put them in a vase en masse, and they look beautiful. If you know anything about floristry, it's the same as interior design. You always want to buy in odd numbers, not even, because odd numbers are more intriguing to the eye in a vase. The other thing with botanicals is, this goes for fresh or real, you never want the stem to show. So the stem always goes under the vase, and the head of the, whether it's foliage or whether it's a hydrangea just topples over the vase, because then that makes it look a lot cooler and more expensive and grander than it really is. So you always kind of hide the stem. And the other thing is then overdose on texture. So I'm always having something that is a little bit more prickly and clocked with something that's very smooth. So there's so many ways that you can, you know, botanical up your house without having to be a florist. So I think the biggest thing is taking a stem and just getting 3 or 5 of them and plonking them in a vase, and that looks super beautiful. And that's what I've done all over my house. And anything that's kind of tumbling and trailing, falling over a shelf or a dresser, also looks really, really beautiful. And then, like, we've designed them so every single stem goes with every single stem. You never have to think, can I put that stem with that stem? Will it work? Because we've designed it, because it's a very curated collection and there's no more than like 35 SKUs. Every single stem looks beautiful with the next stem. So it's always going to work.
With that botanicals and also with your interiors, what I'm getting is just don't be careful. Don't be careful about anything. Just break the rules and kind of lose the fear, really. Yeah, and just go for it. And it will look right because you did it then.
The thing is that if you don't lose the fear and if you always second guess, you just end up not doing anything and you end up with a house that's blah. Whereas if you do it, and let's say it doesn't work, I've done things so many times. I've painted walls a funny colour. I've clad walls in wood that haven't worked. But everything that hasn't worked has led to a better thing. So I would encourage you to get off the starting block and give it a go as opposed to doing nothing. Because when you do nothing, you just end up with a really super boring space. But when you give it a go and when it works, it literally is life changing.
So we have your faux flowers and Brem Thomas. The product
line, they look so beautiful.
They're so fabulous and they just look perfect where they are. It's such a beautiful addition to the interiors. But your product line is ever increasing. So it started out with lamps and, I mean, furniture, mirrors, lighting. There's nothing you don't do now. Or is there anything you don't do? Is there something that you want to do next?
Yeah, I mean, funny, we're just on autumn winter 20, actually. I just come from a meeting. It's like, oh my God, autumn winter 20, here we go. But we are massively upscaling sculpture, which is super exciting. Yeah, because I think that decorative items like sculpture really kind of, they're one of those items I think that just, I don't know, bring a little bit of joy to a space. So we're upscaling sculpture and we've really gone, I mean, I'm quite obsessed with this tribal sort of plant. So we've gone very tribally on vases, which is super exciting. And then, yes, I mean, lighting and mirrors and all of that side of things. But obviously, for me, I've got quite a masculine, quite edgy vibe. So everything in my shelter has to have that kind of vibe, if that makes sense.
Okay. You love it so much. Like, the passion is so evident. Your sister's a florist. How did you start then in this business that you love so much? Where did it begin?
I was an interior designer. So I was an interior designer in America for 4 years and then came back to the UK and interior designed a little bit, but then somehow got into the styling side and then got quite bored with styling. And then everything that I wanted for photo shoots, I couldn't find in stores. So I'm like, oh, I'm just going to open my own store. And that was sort of like 17 years ago. So I opened a tiny little store and then it's kind of morphed from there, really. And then we bought in the early years, everything from Middle Guys. And then again, got really bored with the recession, that everything was just so homogenized and really boring that I said to them, let's start designing our own stuff. Being an independent, I'm really lucky. Like, when you're a big boy, you have to think of, you have so many people involved and so many opinions. But being an independent, we can literally, and Gemini designed for ourselves. So we would never put anything in production that we would never have in our homes, no matter if it's a money spinner. I mean, it drives my accountant mad because we're constantly having arguments, him going, oh, yes, we must put this in because the margins are like 5,000,000%. And I'm like, no, it's not working. I don't want it. So, but we'll never put anything into production that isn't in Gem's house or isn't in my house. And I think that's what's really kind of stood us apart. So, yes, I have to be commercial, but at the end of the day, because I'm so obsessed with interiors, I have to love everything. Everything that is on that site, and it has to be able to be to go in my house. So I think that's why we look a little bit different.
And that's why it works too, is because what we see on your website, what we see in Brem Thomas, we see in your home. And it's very hard to sell something if you don't love it. It's very hard to stand behind it if it's not true to you. So I think that's why it's such a huge success.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I am pretty obsessed with it. And like you said, I think that, you know, the reason I'm obsessed with it, as it's all sort of going back in circles, but as we began this conversation, it's just that sense of well-being and the sense of being really happy in your space. And you can't be happy in your space if you're not surrounded by things that you love. And I can't produce things that I don't love because that wouldn't make me happy. So it's all, you know, circles within circles. But that's the point. I have to design things that I want in my house that I absolutely love.
So this is like a little mini masterclass because you just have so much advice, but I'm going to try and glean as much information from you while I have you. So quick fire round then, Abigail. What is the biggest mistake you see people making in decorating? Starting on a positive note.
What's the biggest mistake? Not having enough lighting. Because lighting, even in an average size room, an average standard Victorian-y size room, you should have a minimum of 8 lamps. Minimum. Because I know it sounds a lot, but lamps and lighting create atmosphere. And I see so many, particularly as the light, and we're going into the cooler months, so the light is going earlier. If you have a few lamps in a room, you just don't create a cozy space, and it's an instant cosifier. So not having enough lighting, biggest decorating mistake, and one of the cheapest things that you can address and make. Cool.
Okay, if you have a blank canvas and you have colour, texture, lighting, which are you starting with?
Colour is because the minute that you apply colour to walls, and I don't just mean inky dark like me, the minute that you apply any colour to your walls, and your walls, remember, are 60% of your space, you're changing the atmosphere in a room. So it's the single most transformative thing that you can ever do to your space.
Okay. What's the biggest game changer, as you've seen it, in decorating? What is the one thing you do which changes the picture immediately?
Playing around the scale. So when you put something that's too big in a room, whether that's, like I was saying, whether it's a big mirror on a wall or it's a pendant that's slightly too big, you're creating magic. So I need magical interiors, and you can't do that when everything's proportioned. So if you play around with scale a bit, and you only have to do one thing in a room, if you sort of think of it like an exclamation mark, you don't want everything supersized, but one thing will knock that space out of the park.
Okay. I can't wait to get home and start messing around. So what are your trend predictions for 2020 then? I know you're moving more into, or you're focusing right now on sculptures, but what are the trend predictions as you see them for 2020?
In terms of colour, I'm very obsessed, and we're working on a palette now. That's very, it sounds a bit weird, but very camera, I can't even say the word, very sort of burnt toffee and very caramel. So it has depth. It's soft, but it's not quite as dark as I've been in the past. But it has this beautiful nuance of colour. And for me, and I know I keep saying it, I have to say that texture, and all sorts of texture, I'm not just talking super slubby rugs. I'm talking the texture of a hand-thrown vase or a lamp that's been made from clay. And what that does on an interior is incredible. So we are becoming super, super, super obsessed with all things textural going into next year, because it literally lifts the spirits. And it sounds weird, but texture is one of the easiest things that you can do to make your home feel cozy.
Okay, what do you think you'll be most happy to see the back of then in 2019?
Blush coloured walls and copper. I think, you know, the thing is, I mean, obviously trends are very personal, but the thing with interiors is, and I say this to so many people in my classes, is by all means embrace trends if you like the trend, but don't embrace a trend just because it's a trend, because I don't think interiors should be like fashion. I don't want to swap up my rugs in spring and change the art on the wall. Like, I want to buy things that are going to live with me for years, and if I see something else, then I'll just swap it to another room, but I don't want to get rid of it. So interiors, I don't think, should be so trend led. And so that's why people say to me, what happens when dark interiors are going to go out of fashion? And I just say, when I did them, when I began them, they weren't in fashion. And of course they'll go out of fashion, but I don't care, because I'm not worried about what other people think. And I think that's the biggest thing. We're also worried about what the Joneses think, what our friends think. And I think that if you can just follow your heart, you'll just get a space that you'll really love and not follow trends.
You'll be happier there. Yeah. And the other thing is, I was watching a video you had on your Instagram, and your kitchen just looked magical. That's why it's where the dream dinner party is happening. But you were saying, yeah, we're going to change the kitchen soon. And I just thought, don't. Like, you know, is there any place in your room? I know that it's your business and it's your flair and your passion. Is there any place that you just think, I'm leaving that? That is just perfect and it's never going to get touched. Any little corner in your
room? No, I mean, the kitchen probably looks perfect to you, but I've had it for 20 years. It's just been really beaten around and the cupboards are hanging off, and it's a 20-year-old kitchen. So it's going to look quite a bit different. But that's I think the kitchen and the bathroom are the two biggest things that we first did when we moved in 20 years ago. And obviously my taste has moved on from then. It's not how it is now. The first things that we did, and they're the two rooms that are about to be changed. So the bathroom is about to have a massive overhaul and the kitchen is about to have a massive overhaul. But really what you're seeing are all the finishing touches that turn the kitchen around. You're not seeing my cupboards that hang off the door and my scuffed units and my horrible stainless steel work stuff. You're just seeing the chandelier and the lovely bits, but that's good. It's just, for me, they're the two areas that we first did 20 years ago that haven't changed since we moved in and actually now need a revamp. But like I was saying a second ago, people think I paint my walls every 6 months. I really don't. I've had my sofa for 20 years. I have pieces of furniture for 10 years. When you buy and design from the heart, I don't want to get rid of anything. I have such a trauma when it comes to Christmas because I have this internal problem about what piece of furniture am I moving out to put the trees? Because I love everything in the room. And it's like, Graham, it drives my husband mad because he's like, oh, not the tree conversation again, because I get myself in this terrible tin.
The biggest lesson from our little mini masterclass is the paint, because I would have thought, okay, I can color match that, get it a little bit cheaper, but the pigments are so important.
The pigments are so important. I honestly can't tell you how many emails I get saying, oh, I want to go dark, but it looks so depressing. And then all I say is, what's the brand? Was it synthetic? And it's yes. And that's why, because it doesn't change and it's so flat. So, I mean, the cheapest way, and I shouldn't really say this, but I'm just feeling nice as I have a paint range. The cheapest way to kind of cut your paint budget in half is to undercoat in a cheaper brand and then top coat in a more expensive brand. And therefore, you'll get all those nuances of colour and it will look beautiful, but you cut your paint budget in half. This is where my accountant is literally trying to get down the stairs and throttle me.
We won't send him this podcast. But then you talk about the flea markets, and, you know, we're so mindful of sustainability in every industry now.
Yeah.
But as a creator and as a person with such a beautiful and growing brand, is there any way that you can include sustainable products? Do you upcycle? Do you source from vintage? Is that possible for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the thing is that, I mean, it has completely changed since I first started off. And all the factories that we work with all the big boys. So they have, like the IKEAs of this world. So they have to be really in line in terms of sustainability and materials. So all our flowers and all our botanicals are painted from pigments of the earth, not synthetics, for example. We try and be as sustainable as we possibly can by not using polyfoam in our packaging and using brown packaging. I have always said all along that I can never buy something purely because it's sustainable if I don't love it. So obviously we're all trying to work towards making it a lot more sustainable. And it is a real shift. It's a real shift. And we buy quite a lot of vintage, which obviously is the most incredible thing that you can do for the store. We don't really put it online because it just goes so quickly. And vintage is a great way of kind of doing that. But yes, I think the whole industry is kind of waking up now and we're all more mindful. And that's why I think, you know, for me, I would never buy something for my interior just because it's cheap as chips and that fills that surface. I want to buy something that I'm going to have for years and I'm not going to throw out season by season by season, which I think more and more people are doing. Like, fashion used to be so throwaway and now we're thinking about it more consciously. And that's the same with interiors. I'm not going to buy a cushion because it's £2 and it's going to look okay for 3 months. I want to buy a cushion that's a bit more money that I'm going to have for 10 years. So that's another way of thinking about it.
And that circular approach in itself is just sustainable. So that's the way to do it, isn't it?
Exactly. Well,
it's been a joy to talk to you. God help them at home when I get back there and start throwing around and throwing the kitchen table beside my bedroom and messing with scale. It really is. If you know, your Instagram is just a place you can learn by every single post. And the design class is constantly going on. And if you're in Ireland or wherever, you can still get one online, right?
Yes, you can. Absolutely, you can. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've had great fun.
Thank you so much, Abigail Ahern. Lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Brian Palmas podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to share and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Official Brian Palmas on Instagram for more updates.